to be Premier of British Columbia, you need a tough guy.
Few of his political opponents, let alone his supporters, would disagree with that self-description by William Andrew Cecil Bennett. He's 76 years old today. And for the next half hour, a personal portrait of this most durable of B.C. politicians.
Will there ever be another Premier of the province for two decades?
No.
At a stretch?
No.
You're the last?
Yep.
20
first
year
and last.
First and last 20-year Premier?
For this province.
Maybe for the country.
I don't know. I want to say about the country. I'm talking about British Columbia. British Columbia.
What do you think that is? Times?
Times.
Yeah. Media? Communications? People wear out faster than they...
Not only that, but... we were in a certain period of British Columbia development. And we were made for that period.
If you came to power now, you wouldn't be premier in 1996.
No.
That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, if the child makes the man...
I had a lovely child. Couldn't have been better.
Your family in those days was not wealthy.
No.
Would you describe it as a poverty?
No. I never lacked a meal in my life. We never poor. Not in the real things.
No.
Not in the real things.
What are the real things, sir?
Well, a good home. Good family. Good brothers and sisters. Good community life. Good church life.
The church played quite a part in your entire life, but in those days in particular, it was quite
a big thing. What was the church and the Sunday school especially and the Sunday school picnics and stuff? We had barrels of fun. Just lots of fun.
What is your earliest recollection as a child?
When I was about 2 years old, sitting under a Christmas tree.
You weren't into politics quite at the age of two, but it wasn't very long afterwards that you got involved.
No. When I was about 11, and the federal election of 1911 between Sir Robert Borden and Sir Wilfrid Laurier, and I paraded with the Tories and torchlight parades and so forth.
In that parade when you were 11, there was an event, was there not, that had a fairly significant impact on you at the time? Was there not a burning in effigy of Laurier?
Oh, yes. The great rivalry between the Liberals and Conservatives were the only two parties. And they each planned to burn the other leader on election night. Mm-hmm. And so they would have a pile of oil barrels, wooden oil barrels, and they had them soaked. And they kept piling them higher each day, each party trying to get a little higher than the other. And then on election night, and each of the had a picture of the of Laurier or Borden. And on election night, of course, the Tories knocked the Liberals down and burnt Laurier, you see, on this bonfire. Oh, that was lots of fun.
Did that give you an idea for something that happened way down the road, a piece in the lake in 1959?
No, but I always knew, I think, the fire was a very symbolic force. It was very significant in British Columbia when we paid off all the direct debt. It had never been done in Canada before and never been done anywhere that I know of. And so we had to have a symbol for it.
You started to attend political meetings in your teen years, though.
Yes.
That's when it started. Do you remember anything from them? Did you follow issues or personalities at that time?
Personalities. On the issues, the parties keep changing.
Mm-hmm.
But it is personalities. People in politics, they say, let's talk the issues. And issues are important. But people are followers of men. Mm-hmm. All through history you'll find
mm-hmm.
people follow men. Why do they shift from liberal to conservative or this party or that party? It's a switch of leadership.
You say a leader's got to be a tough guy. What was the toughest action you ever took as premier?
Oh, the toughest, to fire a friend of mine.
P. Aguilardi?
No. Well, that was tough, too. But
tougher than that. Tell us about that one.
Yeah. When I was a boy in New Brunswick, this man who was, was a great engineer. He was building railroad for the government there. He was also head of their power commission. And I was going on with a friend in a holiday up to St. John River. I was about 15 or 16. And he said, well, he said, I've got a little shack that we've, construction shack, we've passed by it now. You and your friend can use that. Anyway, to make a long story short, years go by. I'm out in Alberta and then into British Columbia and then Premier and then, and he's the head of the Power Commission under John Hart. And they built some power plants, some plants up in the, on the island and up here in the interior. And there's rumors that this plant was going to go out. Collapse. The dam was going to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
So we contacted them three times. We said, no way. No way. They didn't even send inspectors in. So the darn thing did go out. Appointed Royal Commission. Royal Commission found the commission at fault. So they're all three were fired. That was very difficult. To fire a friend of our family.
Yes.
From boyhood days who did things for me and everything else. And now I'm the one that fires them.
You're listening to WAC at 76, a tribute to former Premier W.A.C. Bennett on his 76th birthday. We'll be back in a moment. Now back to our special program, WAC at 76.
What do you think was your proudest moment as Premier, the crowning achievement, if you want to put it that way?
The greatest thing we did was the two-river policy, the Peace River and the Columbia River. Nobody else would have built that. Both parties, Liberals and Conservatives, sent their best beef from Ottawa to defeat us on it. The United States came up here and followed me every meeting where I had a meeting. See what I was saying, because they never thought I was going to build the peace. They thought I was just using a lever against the Columbia. Of course, I wanted them both. And our greatest thing was that against everybody's advice and everybody's criticism, we built those two-river policies in early 60s. Instead of building, and the NDP didn't want to build them until 1984. And even if it was as late as this, social credit, we saved the people of this province $2 billion of capital costs.
Mr. Barrett and Mr. Williams love to quote, nothing is freer than free, my friend.
That's right. Nothing is going to be freer than free when we get full payment from the United States. And nothing's going to be greater. In the last 30 years of this treaty, I'm getting all this American power for nothing. No.
You believe history will make its judgment.
Oh, certainly. History will say this is great. History will say Barrett and Williams were stupid.
Some people have suggested that your greatest strength is your greatest weakness, and that's loyalty. For example, some people have suggested that loyalty kept you from taking the tough action that you should have taken in the Robert Summers case, and kept you from taking action for a long time. What do you say to that criticism now, almost, 20 years later?
That was the low point in our regime. We had rumors that there was something wrong in the forestry department. So in our government, we hired private detectives, the best there was in Vancouver, best. They went and see. And they came in back and said there wasn't anything. We sent them back again. They came back and said there wasn't anything. They said it was, they checked in, it was straight political. And that was the reason why. That when the things rumbled about them, I thought there was nothing to it because we had already looked into it. And that's security. And really, what the fellow did was something very stupid. His daughter was getting married, apparently. He needed some new rugs to fix out. He didn't have any money. And these people gave it to him or borrowed it, lent it to him, whatever they did. He said that they were going to pay it back. Anyway, when we did find out about it, he was allowed just like that. Just like that. In the afternoon, Williston was sworn in as forestry minister and Kernan as mines. That night, when the House assembled, they were looking after those departments and nobody knew anything about it. It was done just like lightning. But when he went out, we had the friends and foes within the department search that department with a fine-tooth comb. And they didn't find one single concession given to any business or anything, any industry. Not 1 cent. But he acted in a foolish way and he had to pay for it.
Ever talk to him after that?
Oh, yes.
Is he bitter about...
I don't think so. He must feel badly about it because he knows really, as I know, he did really nothing wrong.
But he did do something wrong in that he committed a criminal act.
I don't think he committed, in my opinion, he didn't.
But he did go to jail for it.
Yes.
You think that?
I think things happen in Ottawa every day nearly down there 10 times worse and nobody goes to jail.
You think it was partly political?
I'll let you surmise.
There was one other case during your 20 years that people thought that you were not tough enough. Loyalty lasted too long. And that was the case of Mr. Gilardi.
Well, not, why now Gilardi? Now, everything I asked Gilardi to do, he did. I asked him to build highways. As Minister of Finance, he gave him double money and everything else and told him what highways he wanted to build and everything else. And he built them efficiently and built them well. And he amazed everybody what a good job he did. But he talked a lot and he made lots of enemies too and a lot of people were after him. But I don't think he was dishonest. I think most provinces get in their eye teeth to have a highway minister like Gilardi.
He became a political liability at one...
I don't know. In certain areas, but in certain districts and certain groups of people, he was a great asset.
Mm. Oh, he has his strong supporters to this day.
Oh, yes. Sure, you had a big meeting tonight. In Kelowna here, they turned out, Jerome.
Do you hold any grudges against the damage that he might have done to the government at any time, or you ever talk to him now, see him?
I saw him a few months ago in the Vancouver Hotel. I tell him, friend and foe, I have no political enemies. I have no feelings against people. I have no feeling against any of the liberal leaders, 6 or 7 of them that were defeated in this province, 6 or 7 conservatives, 6 or 7 NDP. I have no bitterness towards any of them.
What about the one man who defeated you ultimately, Mr. Barrett?
No. I'm very sorry for Mr. Barrett. That he entered the position without knowledge. And he meant well in many things. But he did very poorly.
Why?
A chap said to me the other day in Vancouver, after the government raised the car licenses, he says, I've got 3 or 4 cars. He said, I'm not going to vote so good anymore. I said, that's up to you. But I said, you have a nice drugstore business here. And you and I are friends. You just let me run it for you for a while. And now I guarantee not to double your business, but to triple your business inside of 6 months. He said, how will you do that? I said, I'll sell all your merchandise at not a third the selling price, a third of your cost. I said, that's what Barrett did with that car insurance. Anybody can sell that stuff. Everybody can get popular giving away ice cream cones, you know? I mean, that's no way to run business for a country or anything else, you're bound to get in terrible trouble.
You still believe in balanced budgets at any cost?
Any cost.
Would you accept?
Because the other cost is, you got to pay next year. You got to pay the balanced budget, plus the interest charges on the old one.
Out of all the opposition leaders that you faced over the years, which one did you respect or perhaps fear the most, but respect, we'll use that word?
Winch.
Why? Why Winch?
Oh, the cleverest. Best trained. But Harold Winch is the best leader of the opposition that's ever, in my opinion, that's ever been in the legislature in British Columbia. I traveled the province with him, and when we were coalition and he was leader of the opposition, we were on a post-war rehabilitation council set up by the government. And we traveled the province together, and we became great friends. He's been in this home. He's had dinner here.
You're listening to WAC at 76, a tribute to former Premier W.A.C. Bennett on his 76th birthday. We'll be back in a moment. Now back to our special program, WAC at 76.
All right, from the past, let's talk about the present. First of all, the present of yourself. What's a typical day in the life of WAC Bennett these days?
Well, the typical day now is one of relaxation. Mm-hmm. I'm not tired, and I'm not retired. My mind is very active, and my body's getting more active. I go rock around my driveway 3 or 4 times a day, and I've got my weight down to 168 pounds now, so I'm in fighting shape.
What's the condition of British Columbia, the province, today, sir?
Very, very difficult. I got to watch myself that I don't get myself in the position of being too critical of the short Barrett years. I'm very glad that the government has been a realistic government. I'm sorry they've had to put on the tough medicine. I cry that they had to put on this tough medicine. I cry for the people who had to pay its extra for ferries and for car insurance and these different things. But they had to face it. I would think that within next year, in the start of April 1977, start of the new fiscal year, we'll be starting in a new period in British Columbia. What I suggest to the people of British Columbia, in private enterprise and everything, that they start to get ready for it, to get the benefits of the expansion it's going to take in British Columbia. Because British Columbia is Canada's the best country in the world, I'm convinced, and British Columbia is by far the best part of Canada. And our population is going to increase faster on a percentage base than any place else. Our growth is natural, study that growth and take care of that growth and cultivate that growth. But things don't just happen. So I would think that starting next year, we'll probably go in a period of expansion again, and we'll have great times back in British Columbia.
What will it be based on? I mean, in the...
Confidence. Everything's based on confidence.
But somewhere there's got to be economic activity.
No, confidence. Only confidence. What are things carrying Britain through 2 great world wars, and she had to give away all her treasure and everything else to pay for her debts and everything? Confidence.
Look at the situation they're in now.
Look at the situation they're in now. No other country in the world could stand it. No, Britain will come out all right. Don't sell Britain short.
Are we in for another period of booms in British Columbia, as was witnessed under your government, or is that over?
I don't know. But we're in a period of expansion.
Sure. You don't prefer the word boom, like...
No. Because I never was a boomer. I was called a boomer, but I was never a boomer. I was an expansionist. I believe in growth. These people who say there's no growth, then they must be recognized one thing. They must love unemployment. They must love to see what the master condemned, people lying idle in the marketplace.
There's a lot of talk in our country these days about keeping immigration down.
Yes, it should.
Keep it down?
Yes.
We all came from somewhere else.
Certainly. We don't have to let everybody in at once. When we have a slack in employment, we must not have excess immigration. That is just stupid to have them. some of the policies of the present government are very stupid. That's number one.
They seem to be heading over
number,
that
number two is that they're so stupid is that they keep the Canadian dollar priced a higher price than the American dollar. Number three places where they're really stupid, they keep our interest rate way higher than the American interest rate. These are, they used to call about the three wise men from the East. These are the three stupid policies of the East now.
The interest rate is up there because of the demands on the economy.
The Bank of Canada works through the chartered banks. They can get shouldn't get the interest rates down bingo tomorrow. They should come down gradually quarter, you know? Mm-hmm. And you do that working just with common banking.
Forgetting immigration but staying with national politics, who's going to win the next federal election, Mr. Bennett?
Conservatives.
Mr. Clark will be the next prime minister?
If he's still the leader.
You think there's a chance he might not be?
I don't think so. I think he'll still be the leader. But he'd have to be very stupid. If he starts fighting with his members about what constituency he's going to run in and all these little things, if he starts to fight on these little things, then he'll snatch defeat out of victory.
And exactly what he's doing.
Well, he won't. Surely he won't.
As someone who's had a certain amount of success in dealing with opposition leaders over the years and in defeating all but one of the opposition leaders you tackled over the years, do you have any secret, something that if they had known, perhaps would have beaten you much earlier on in the game?
Perhaps you noticed today, I'm a very emotional person.
I've noticed that before.
Yes.
On platforms and during speeches.
But good thing that the opposition never found that out, really. Because if they had appraised me, I would have collapsed.
50 years or 100 years from now, how would you like you and your administration to be thought of? What image would you like to have left on the history of British Columbia?
That we found in British Canada's number one have-not province. In 20 years, we made it in Canada's number one have province. We made not only the public sector that way, we made the private sector that way.
One question that has to be asked, can't conclude this interview without doing it, and that's who's going to win the next election, and need we ask, I might add.
And I don't think the NDP will be back in for a long, long time, because the people have been inoculated against it.
Okay, you say the NDP will never get back in. How do they get in the first place?
I had studied the world regarding the problems, and there was only one problem, and that was inflation. So I chose defeat. Rather than inflation.
You chose defeat, sir?
Yeah, rather than live with inflation.
So
either we would fight inflation
or
defeat, one or the other.
So did you know at that point that the risk was that great?
I told my cabinet. This election was the first time I ever told them to prepare for defeat. I said, we're... I've always said, once the government gets free of the cold water, it's finished.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the cold water now? It's inflation.
Is Trudeau's anti-inflation board in effect what you were going for, only stronger? I mean, you were trying to do it on a, except for your own area of control, you were trying to do it on a voluntary basis.
Oh, yes, but we were going to use... We're going to use pressure.
Would we have seen a provincial anti-inflation board after the election?
Yes.
6.5%?
6.5%.
Would it have worked?
Yes.
Did your cabinet try to talk you out of the election? Because you could have held on to the next spring, easily. I mean, you had another...
I'll say this about my cabinet. They never tried to talk me out of the election. In our cabinet, we never had a ballot ever. It was all by mutual agreement.
W.A.C. Bennett, 76 years old today, and still ready to fly right into a heated political argument at the very mention of words like Columbia River Treaty, Pay As You Go, Phil Gallardi, B.C. Rail, the ferries, just about every other feature that made his regime so, if nothing else, unique in British Columbia history. The arguments, of course, will never end. How does he himself want to be remembered, though, in the history books? Well, the answer is so entirely unlike his term as premier. It's short, and it's simple.
I did my best.